Welcome to On the Brighter Side. As it is heating up outside for summer, we are also heating things up inside of On the Brighter Side. This week, we are starting our Women's Sexual Health series with interviews from sex therapists, mojo experts, and practitioners who are focused on bringing pleasure and passion back into the sexual experience. And if you are a guy and you're thinking, I'm out of here, let me just remind you how important it is for you to support your spouse in a healthy pursuit of sexuality and the ability to experience sex in the way that it was intended, not only for procreation, but also for pleasure and for passion. And you understanding the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of your spouse's sexual experience is going to be absolutely priceless. So I hope that you will enjoy this series for the next couple of months and the interviews that we are bringing to you to help ignite and invigorate your sexual pleasure and passion. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce our first guest, who is a mojo expert, because I just know you are going to love this interview. And welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm really, really, really excited for our episode today. I am chatting with the Dana B. Myers of The Booty Parlor, and she is somebody that I look up to. I love her content. I love the way she talks to mamas, and I am so excited to share her with you today. So with that, hello, Dana. How are you doing?
I'm great, Monica. Thank you so much for having me. I'm talking to the Monica Tanner. Yes,
you are. I know all about you, but I wonder if you could start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your family.
Yeah, sure. So I am the founder of Booty Parlor, which is a sexy beauty and lifestyle brand. I started 15 years ago with my then boyfriend, now husband, and I'm an author of 2 published books. I'm a speaker. I'm a coach. I create online programs for moms, and I'm also a mom of 2 kids. And my 2 kids, they are 6 and 9 right now. So I'm in that phase, which is no longer baby and not quite teens. It's a really nice, sweet spot of motherhood.
It is very fun. It is very fun. And I can tell that you practice what you preach, but I love a good origin story. So can you tell us how Booty Parlor was born and then how it evolved after you became a mama?
Yes, totally. So I kind of grew up in the world of beauty. My mom is a makeup artist. And as a young girl, I would follow her to the shop where she had her little studio space, and women would sit down in her chair and she would begin to transform them with makeup and girlfriend to girlfriend conversation. And women would just spill the beans on what was happening in their relationships and how they felt about their bodies and their faces. And so I was just sort of privy to this inner working world of women and femininity. And my mom would always give these great pep talks and transform them with makeup. And when they would look at themselves, it was as if they were really seeing their inner and outer beauty in a new way. And they would always stand up leaving feeling so much more confident. And so I always thought, like, wow, that's just how femininity and womanhood should be. Confident, you know, turned on to yourself in connection and collaboration with other women, helping you feel good. And so that was a very strong foundation for this basis of being in this space of female empowerment. I was also just a very sexually curious teenager, and my hormones were raging. I was exploring, and my parents knew what was up. And instead of shaming me or putting fear into me about the topic, they just really talked to me openly about it. And they acknowledged that I was a sexual being. And then within that conversation, then it was like, okay, let's talk about boundaries and values and what could happen. And can your heart get broken, and, you know, all these different things. And so what that did for me was just really acknowledge what I already knew which was, this was an innate part of me. This was an exciting part of me. This was a part of me that I was learning new things about myself through and also having a lot of fun with. And so naturally I became that girl that all my friends were coming to for both beauty and sex advice. So beauty and sex just became my jam my whole life. I went into the music business. I was a classical pianist. I studied piano and then I went and worked in rock and roll for a long time. But I always was still like buying my friends their first vibrators. At the time, you know, this was 15 years ago, the sexual wellness business as we know it today was still very much the XXX business. And I knew there had to be a better way to do it. So I was sitting in the backyard with some girlfriends. We were having Cosmos because Cosmos were hot back then. And I said, oh, it's like we're at the booty parlor. And I meant to say beauty parlor, right? This experience of sort of like that I had witnessed with my mom, but I had had a couple Cosmos and it came out booty parlor. And I thought, oh my God, that's it. That's something. It's like the beauty parlor for your love life. And I could do books and I could do products and I could do events. And it was almost as if I saw it all in a flash in one moment. And I told my boyfriend about it. And he said, well, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do it. So we wrote a business plan and we raised some money and we quit our jobs and we launched it out of our living room, you know, with really no understanding of how to create consumer products, but just a lot of desire to do so, a lot of desire to create change for women. And Victoria's Secret became our first client. We worked with Henri Bendel, Ulta, you know, hundreds and hundreds of retail partners and hotels. We had a home party plan business for a long time, which is really where I learned about the inner workings of women's lives and relationships all across the country. And then I became a mom. And then I realized the whole world of challenges and obstacles that women experience to their sense of self-love and sex and relationships and communication once kids enter the picture. And for me, and I don't know about if you have had these moments, but for me, that was the first moment where I thought, oh my God, my libido is really challenged and my identity is really challenged and my sense of freedom is really challenged. And suddenly I'm feeling resentment for my husband who I know I absolutely adore and love and respect, but I hate you now, you know, because I feel like I'm taking on all the work. So I just decided to put myself through like a boot camp that became the Mommy Mojo Makeover, which became a workshop and then a book. And then it evolved into the Satisfied Mama online course. And it's just really my passion as I'm in the throes of motherhood myself. And my community is so full of moms. And I think moms, we need this work so much. And so that is the long but sort of short version of how I got to where I am.
Well, I love it. And it really is that sheds so much light because you have such an incredible understanding of where we're coming from as women, as moms, as, you know, sexual beings. Like, it's so awesome in all of your products as I've been experiencing them to see this. You have this incredible insight and it really is remarkable the way you are able to help moms. So you have so much great wisdom about this topic that is not always talked about. It's a little bit taboo, but it's so crucial to a satisfying and fulfilling relationship. How did you learn to be so comfortable with your sexuality and what has been the biggest obstacle you've personally had to overcome in this area?
So I really became comfortable with my sexuality, I think, by recognizing the pleasure in pleasure. Right? I think that I, you know, once I started having orgasms, I thought, well, there's nothing wrong with this. And then it was always, you know, through the different, you know, lovers that I had before I met my husband, I really saw it as a, almost like as a creative playground of sorts, where I was learning about myself, where I was learning about my pleasure, where I was practicing confidence in communication, you know, with my different partners and trying things on for size. And, you know, I had some unsavory experiences as well, but I always knew just not to get stuck in shame. I always knew that each experience was really an educational experience for me and a practice in self-awareness. Somehow I had that awareness, that understanding. And so I just kept going. And also, you know, when I was 13, my mom said to me, you know, honey, masturbation is just as pleasurable as actual sex. And I will never forget where I was standing on the like mauve carpet when she said that to me. And that to me, that practice of self-pleasure and connecting with my own orgasm is really the foundation of my healthy sexuality. And I think we'll probably get a little bit more into that as we go along. I think the biggest obstacle to my sexual satisfaction, I think were the hidden blocks that I didn't know I would be experiencing once I entered into motherhood, like the loss of or the reduction in personal freedom. I never fully understood how much my sexuality was fueled by my freedom, by the ability to leave the house whenever I wanted to and go experience the world and take in sensual inputs from the concert I was going to or the shops or the art gallery. Or I was always so turned on by the freedom I had, so that when it was dramatically reduced, coupled with, you know, the hormonal changes, the loss of time, the incredible amount of, you know, giving that we have to do, it was really when I had kids that was a rude awakening. And I just thought, this isn't possible that my sexiest days are behind me. I don't want that. I'm not willing to settle for that for myself as a sexual woman, and also as an equal, active, alive, participating player in my relationship.
I love
that. So that's when it's really when I thought, no, nope, something has to change. So yeah. And it's a fun process. Changing, growing is fun, hard, but fun.
Yeah. So in your book, The Mommy Mojo Makeover, which I am absolutely loving, I'm about halfway through and I just like look forward to reading it every night. You go through 28 tools to reclaim yourself and reignite your relationship. You write to mamas as this transition was huge for you and it can wreak havoc on sexual intimacy. Can you talk about some of those tools and how to help new mamas get their mojo back after childbirth?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, the way that the tools are broken up, or it's like, you know, there are things you do for yourself, and then there are things you do within your relationship. And I think that it has to start with you. You can't be feeling exhausted, run down, not having any fun with your girlfriends, feeling resentful that you're taking on the lion's share of childcare, and then be like, yeah, I'm ready to jump in the sack with you. Like, it doesn't work. You know, you can fake it for a minute, but you can't force it. And your partner can sense when you're not actually present in intimacy with them. They can sense that it feels like an obligation. And you never want your pleasure to be someone else's obligation, right? So, you know, the tools are really about practicing self-love. So many have experienced challenges to the way we see our bodies, the way we feel in our bodies, whether it's that we're carrying extra weight or that our breasts are in a dramatically different place after we've given birth. That can lead to not wanting to share your body. So there's a tool called Reboot Your Body Confidence. It's about practicing self-love and affirmations, loving and accepting your body, but also learning to just respect your body. I think there's so many messages out there right now, which is like, love your body, no matter the size, but also just respect the body that you're in. That can go a long way. There's, you know, my favorite exercise in the book is the solo session, which is, you know, masturbation, self-pleasure, call it what you like. But again, that is the foundational practice, I think, to keeping your libido, to reawakening your libido, and then to keeping it humming along at a good level. There's a lot of communication tools. I think that once kids enter the picture, communication can quite easily break down because both partners are tired and both partners may not fully understand what the other one is going through. And if you're not well practiced in open, positive communication, you can experience a real breakdown there. There's a series of exercises that I call sexy sessions. There's 8 of them in the book. And these are different sexual experiences and scenarios to help bring consistency and frequency and variety back into your sex life as well. Because what can happen is, you know, you're still having sex, but it's once a week on the same night and it's the same routine every time. And that's really no fun for anybody. You know, that's sort of just becoming something you tick off on the box. So the book is about really finding your sensual self-confidence again, having more fun and freedom so that you feel almost like a reborn, independent sexual human with authentic desire again. And then how do you bring that into your relationship? There's a number of tools to do that as well.
Yeah. So one of the things I have loved that I've picked up from the tone of your book that I just absolutely so resonate with is that as you're talking about the importance of, you know, coming to yourself and having this like perfect realization of how you are and accepting and respecting the state state that you're in, as well as kind of launching it into this confident, sexy, alive version. And then you come to share that with your partner in your relationship. There is really something so magical that happens when you've got two just really confident and alive and happy, though struggling through the challenges of parenting, but you come together and you can share that most intimate aspect of your life together. I think that's really where the magic happens, and that comes through so well in your writing. So I love that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And you know, oftentimes I wonder, will my quote unquote method or what I've written in the book, will that come across as self-absorbed and selfish? Because it's spending a lot of emotional energy on ourselves. And I don't believe that you have to take that energy away from your children. But I feel that if you don't spend that time and energy on yourself, you don't have the energy to actually give to your children from a place of like abundance and joy, because you're just going to be feeling depleted and sort of in servitude of your household and domestic and childcare responsibility. So I really do believe that, you know, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And that by nurturing yourself, by fueling yourself, by paying attention to the woman behind the mother, that really everyone becomes happier. I think that's, for me, that's just kind of the way I see things. And yet I know there are a lot of women and mothers who are like, I could never stand in front of the, take 10 minutes and stand in front of the mirror and caress my own body and tell myself good things because I've got so many other things to do. I can't do a mommy pop out. A mommy pop out is my recommendation to just bail on your responsibilities once a week, leave them to somebody else, and you go out and you take 2 hours to just explore and be, to just be without doing anything for anyone else, to just open your mind up to imagination and exploration. And a lot of people say, well, my husband can't, he doesn't know what to cook. So you set the dinner up and you make sure everything's ready and then you run out the door. But so I understand that, you know, some of these practices might be perceived as selfish or self-absorbed. But for me, it's just like my happiness is key to everyone else's happiness. I know that. You know, we're the anchors of the family as mothers. We're the thermometers, or we're the temperature read, right? If we're feeling irritated, everyone else is picking up on that. But if we're feeling like we have the time, even if it's 5 or 10 minutes, to nurture ourselves and get a dose of pleasure every day, then we're going to bring that into the family unit. And that's going to kind of be the shining light for the family. And also, I think it's really important to just like help our family under, it's not just sexual pleasure. It's like delighting in a piece of chocolate. It's taking a moment to look up from our phones, to just breathe in the air. It's like, I want to teach my kids about pleasure at large so that they can turn to pleasure when they feel anxious or stressed or uncertain, so that they know that they can make themselves feel good. And eventually I'll teach them about sexual pleasure as well, but just pleasure at large, I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, us. I hear you so much in that. And also I think our kids really, really see all of the meta, right? So if you are taking care of your family and you're resentful and you don't do anything for yourself and you're unhealthy, your kids are reading all of that metadata. They see that. Mm-hmm. But if they see a confident, happy, fulfilled mother who knows how to take care of her needs and doesn't expect anyone else to do that for her, then they are seeing like the magic that is woman. I totally believe that. And being able to, you know, they also read the meta in your relationship. So if your husband comes home and wraps his arms around you and you recoil, they see that, you know, or, you know, I have teenagers now and, you know, my husband will come home and we will like embrace and smooch. Yeah. And of course the kids are like, ew, no, stop. But you can see the delight on their faces. They know that their parents love each other. They know that they are safe within the bounds of that relationship and it makes them happy.
Yes. Totally. And it's showing them, it's modeling what a healthy relationship looks like. It's so important. It's
absolutely
really important.
I love it. I love it all. Okay. So what do you teach couples who maybe aren't new parents anymore, but they've kind of let their sex life grow stale from inactivity or just the everyday life happens?
I mean, look, I think a lot of the tools and techniques that I share in the book apply to parents, whether you have, you know, kids who are 6 months or 16 or even empty nesters. I think that if you find yourself in a sexual rut, and if it's not rooted in like deep resentment, or, you know, you're recovering from an affair, if there's like no major problems, but you're just like, we've been sleeping together for 20 years or more, and I know everything about you. There's nothing new. Like, I'm just not that excited about you anymore. What I recommend is putting sex in the calendar. And I recommend sex, you know, twice a week, making an event out of it. And the reason not everybody likes the idea of scheduling, but the reason I suggest scheduling in 2 sessions a week is that it gives you an opportunity to connect and collaborate on the event, right? So let's say you're like, it's Sunday night, you're like, okay, babe, let's make this a mission. Let's rekindle our sex life. We're going to try Tuesday night and Saturday. So then you can start brainstorming. Okay, what flavor do we want on Tuesday night? A quickie? How do we create that? You know, and it creates conversation and collaboration. And maybe on Saturday we'll spend, let's try a long session. Let's carve out 3 hours where we're just together, and maybe we'll bring in some lingerie or a toy, or maybe we'll try, you know, some role play. That will be silly and weird and awkward, but it will be something new. And so the reason I ask you to plan it is because it brings anticipation and communication and collaboration. If you think that your sex life is just going to return to like hot, crazy new relationship energy and chemistry without investing in it or putting intention on it, it's just never going to happen, because the motivation's not there. You're like, I've been there, seen it, done it. You know, I don't need it. I don't want it. Let's just watch more Netflix. But if you get creative together and co-create, get into the headspace of co-creation, then you can set yourself up for a really clear path of reinvention and getting yourself out of the rut instead of, I always say, don't wait, create, instead of waiting for it to happen.
I love it. I love it. So let's take a pause just for a second and talk about why all of this is important. Like, can you talk for a second about the benefits of a strong and healthy sex life for women and for relationships? Because I can hear some of my listeners being like, why do I even care about any of this?
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, look, I think that the benefits of pleasure are obvious. Feeling good feels good, right? Feeling good feels good. And feeling good from sensual and sexual pleasure is different than a mani-pedi, right? It gives you an opportunity to learn more about yourself, to connect with an innate capability that your body has to experience orgasm, which is a gift. And I think that when you are experiencing frequent and regular and connected, confident pleasure, you know yourself in a deeper way. And not just physically, but you come to know yourself in a spiritual way. I mean, I often will, you know, I'll often pray when I'm masturbating. I'll often use it as a spiritual experience. And maybe that sounds crazy, but for me, this deep knowing of my body connects me to myself. It connects me to spirit. And I just feel better about myself. And it's also incredible stress relief. You know, it's incredibly helpful. Sexual pleasure is incredibly helpful for my anxiety and my stress. As it relates to our relationship, I think that the stresses and demands of parenthood and modern life and running a household and, you know, finances and everything, I feel like intimacy is the glue that binds a couple. I feel like it is the playground where you two can connect and just be you two. It's like you two just getting to be you two without the kids asking for something, without the routine discussions that you have to have about the bills and the carpools and all the daily things that can really make a relationship feel flat. Sexuality is a space and a place in your relationship where you can just connect as lovers. And of course, if you're connecting as lovers, you're going to be bickering less. You're going to feel less frustrated with each other. You're going to feel more of a sense of warmth and connection and co-creation just in your daily life. If there are mismatched sex drives, if there is a long rut in your sexual relationship, you're going to start to feel distant. And distance is like, I hate to say it, but like you let distance go and you can quickly be on a path to divorce. I mean, it's scary. You know, I've been married 15 years this month. And even though our sex life, we invest so much in our intimate life and it's so beautiful. Sometimes when we're both traveling, and of course we work together, so we also have that added pressure. You know, Charlie and I, we rarely fight, rarely. And when we do, it lasts like an hour. But Charlie and I had the biggest fight of our entire relationship of 17 years about 2 months ago. And it really scared me. And I think that because we had been traveling and our communication had broken down in a couple areas in our lives and our sex life had been off because of the traveling, everything kind of came to a head. And it was the first time in our relationship where I thought, oh my God, I get it. I see how couples get divorced. I've never thought about divorce, but I, in the reparation of this fight, I said, oh my God, like I can see how if a couple did not have the tools to communicate through this as we are doing it, I could see, it's like, it was a revelation. I could see how quickly it can lead to divorce. So keeping your communication, your intimacy, keeping that connection, that romance alive, for me, that's just like pillar number one of a healthy relationship. I don't want to get divorced. I never want to get divorced. I don't want my kids to experience that. And so that's big motivation for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So in my experience working with mamas, I would say that the number one killer of a romantic connection, and you've already alluded to it, but it's that R word, resentment. I feel that you are really an expert on this topic and you teach about it really well. Can you talk about the toll resentment has on our relationships and what we can do to alleviate that negative emotion from just taking over?
Yeah, totally. I mean, look, I think resentment is on the opposite side of the spectrum from attraction, right? It really is. It's on the opposite side of the spectrum from attraction. And it's very hard to want to rekindle intimacy when you're really got resentment for your partner and you're like grumbling under your boy, you know, your blood is boiling and you can't believe they didn't do this or didn't do that. And I think that what resentment really is it's unmet need, right? It's just unmet need. And whether you stop asking for help because you feel it's your job to take it on all yourself, or you were asking and you didn't get the help that you needed and you felt like a nag, so you stopped asking, or you asked and you got help, but you didn't like the way you got the help, right? Because that happens too. We're like, well, you don't do it right, so I'll just do it. But then you're like feeling resentment, even though they gave you the help, you just didn't accept it. You weren't able to chill and accept daddy style and the way they did things. So resentment is a killer, and resentment is also rarely a one-way street. And so you might be feeling a lot of resentment and have a complete lack of awareness that your spouse is also feeling resentment towards you. So the way to start healing the resentment is to really ask yourself the question, have I stopped asking for the help that I need? What's the unmet need that's under this? Identify that. Look at the way you're asking for help if you are, because when I learned this tool, I was doing all the wrong things. You know, I think a lot of us march around the house being like, can't you just take out the trash? Can't you just change the baby's diaper? Can't you just watch the kids so I can go to the gym because I feel fat and I haven't been, and you go to the gym every day and da, 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 da. It's just, that is not a request that can make your spouse feel like a hero. Okay. So look at the way you're asking for help, and then understand that men need to be given the opportunity, A, to feel like they have a choice, and B, to rise up and be your hero by helping you. So instead of saying, can't you, or could you, you say, would you? Will you? That is presenting a request that gives them the opportunity to help you, not backing them into a corner or questioning their ability to help you, but it's asking them. And men respond to brief, it's like a golden retriever. It's like brief and direct request. Would you do this then? Will you plan a date for Saturday? Like very clear. You can elaborate and say, because it would make me feel so amazing, but you don't have to. But you have to give them the opportunity to help you in a brief and direct way. And if it's not about a thing, if it's not about doing something for you to give you the help you deserve, if it's more about emotional intimacy and asking, you know, and you need more of that, or maybe you need more romance, then it's, would you be willing to have a conversation with me about our intimacy? You know, and phrase like, Of course he's going to be willing to have a conversation. It's not, you know, you're so closed off. Why can't you just talk to me? Because that's creating more obstacles in between you. So it's really in how you talk about it. It's really in identifying where your needs are unmet. And then it's also, this is something that Charlie and I do frequently. And at first. I wasn't sure how this was going to go. It was like a little experiment, but it's worked out really well. We have what we call resentment check-ins. And this is, you know, because I was in the early days of parenthood, I was always like, I resent you, Charlie, I resent you. And then he was like, well, you know, I have some resentment too that I want to air out. And I was like, oh, self-awareness moment, light bulb. So now what we do is like every couple of weeks, we'll be like resentment check-in. If one of us is feeling a little resentful, and it could be anything, it could be something small, it could be something big. We just sit down and we've created a space, safe space for communication where we just spit it out and we listen to one another. And then we say, okay, I'm willing to try to change this dynamic. What can I do? How can we do this? And we work on it. And it really just clears the air because resentment feels so sticky and gross on the inside. I don't want to walk around feeling that. So we just air it out. And it's become a practice that's become more comfortable as time has gone on.
Okay. I love it. You dropped so much value right there. That was awesome. So you did talk about this a little bit, but communication is another big roadblock, I think, that stands in the way of just an incredible sex life. If a couple has never talked about their wants, needs, and expectations around sex, how can mamas start the conversation without feeling just absolutely totally exposed and like...
Yeah, sure. Look, we weren't raised, you know, there was no class on good sexual communication, right? And more often than not, our mothers weren't exactly, I mean, my mom did, but more often than not, our mothers also didn't give us this kind of education. So I think that when you feel nervous, you can kick off that conversation by saying, hey, you know, meet me on Tuesday night for a glass of wine once the kids are in bed. I want to have a fun sex talk. Make it fun. And you can sit down and you can start with a couple fun questions. You know, how do you remember our first kiss? Or where was the craziest place we had sex? Or what's your favorite memory of having sex together? So start off by having fun and then say, okay, I want to try out maybe some more in-depth questions or explore a little bit more. And the first question is, so what's great about our sex life? And even if you're only having sex once a month and you are really in a bad spot, you can still find something that's great. Something. Then what could be better? Not what do we really need to work on or what's really bad or what's really, you know, messing with my head right now, but what could be better? So it's what's great. What could be better? Creating what are the areas? What are opportunities? Growth? What could be better? And then the third question, which is a little bit more in depth, but I think still quite easy and really special. I love this question. And I apply this question to like all areas of my life with Charlie, is how do we co-create a sex life that feels exciting and compassionate for where we are right now? Because if you have three under three, the sex life that you can have at that moment in your journey in parenting is going to be different from when all the kids are in school or from when all the kids are in high school and you have more time and freedom. So it's recognizing how can we improve our sex life? How can we co-create, which gives each person desires and wishes weight? Co-creation gives each person the ability to say, okay, I feel as though my wishes are being considered and developed here. But recognizing that things are always changing. So you got to keep asking yourselves that question once every few months. How do we co-create a sex life that is exciting, compassionate right now at this moment? Because if you're traveling in the summer with extended family, you might not have as much time or space to focus on your sex life as you do in your regular life, or if you two are on a solo vacation. So that's what I recommend as far as starting communication.
I love that so much. Okay. So two final kind of questions here. I'm going to go back. So going back to that magical honeymoon period of your marriage, and I'm only asking this because mm-hmm. I know I have some listeners that are newlyweds and mm-hmm. I have some listeners who really have the opportunity to kind of go back and make whatever clear. But if you could give yourself any advice for how to build a solid foundation for sexual intimacy to flourish in your marriage, what would you have advised your younger self to do?
That's such a great question. You know, it's so funny. This goes back to the idea that I said of don't wait, create. And it's really about bringing intention to your sex life so that you can put attention on it. And, you know, in the early days, sex is very spontaneous. You go with the flow of your desire. It's there. So you don't really have to think about the intention or about planning it or about scheduling it around the baby's naps. But I guess the advice I would say is bring intention to it no matter what. So even if you don't have to plan sex because the spontaneous desire is there, still bring intention to your intimate life by way of creativity. What else can we try? What else do we want to explore? Where are our boundaries? You know, and having those open conversations with your partner about that as well, so that your intimate life becomes an ever evolving creative process between the two of you. I think that's what I would say, because that mindset, that heart set, I think will guide you throughout your whole relationship.
I love it. So good. All right. My signature question: if you had the undivided attention of all the mamas in all the world for just a few minutes, what is the most important thing you could teach them about getting their mojo back?
Oh God, I love your questions, lady. Wow. Amazing. Okay. The one thing I would teach women about getting their mojo back is to prioritize yourself and to create time, even if it's a few minutes a day, to tune in to your sensuality, right? And I say sensuality because I don't need you to be fully in your sexuality every day or having orgasms every day. I think you should have a few orgasms a week for sure, but to take a few minutes to tune into who you are as a sensual woman. And that might mean when you're folding your laundry, that you press the warm towel up against your body and let your mind drift into a little fantasy of, you know, making love on those towels naked and how that would feel on your body. It's just delighting in the froth on top of your latte. It's listening to music and letting your imagination drift into a little micro sensual fantasy. It's feeling how your clothes feel on your body. It's really feeling the smoothness of your spouse's earlobe, you know, when you caress their face. Because by practicing sensuality every day, by infusing sensuality within the often mundane routine of our lives, it can get very mundane, then you're always remembering that you are in ownership of your sensuality. You are in ownership of your libido. You're in ownership of yourself because you're in control of creating pleasure. So that you're not, you never, if you practice that, you won't find yourself in the place of wondering, oh my God, where's my libido gone? Where's my sensuality gone? Because you'll be in practice of ownership. You'll be in practice of knowing that you're capable of creating sensuality at any moment within any day.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Where can my listeners find you? And what are you working on now that you're most excited about?
Yeah, well, you guys can find me on my website at danabmyers.com. I have a relatively new program that I'm very proud of. It's called The Satisfied Mama. And it's got all my best tools and techniques to help you overcome the most common challenges that we experience to self-love and sex and relationships after kids. And it's a really fun method. It's a really fun way. It's not too heavy. It's not too serious, but it's really fun and effective at helping you get your mojo back. So I would encourage you to check out the program. And that's kind of my main jam right now. That's what I would encourage you to look at.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Seriously, I absolutely loved Dana, and I loved that interview. What a way to kick off our sexual health series with mommy mojo expert Dana B. Myers and her fantastic take on healthy sexuality in marriage after motherhood. So, so good. Let me just tell you that even after I did that interview and edited that interview, I listened to it a couple more times just to grab all the golden nuggets out of it. So this one could be one of your favorites, but we also have more amazing interviews coming your way. So that is really just the tip of the iceberg. I want to invite you to join us in the On the Brighter Side of Marriage Facebook group for weekly trainings and interviews just like this, designed to help you strengthen your marriage, because I firmly believe that we can lower the divorce rate by helping couples have better sex. Like Dana said in her interview, sex and pleasure are really the glue that hold the relationship together, and such a fantastic way to support and sustain each other. And it really is just a fantastic way to lower the stress of everything else that you're facing individually, as a couple, and in the world at large. Watch my Instagram, MoniTanner1, for an opportunity to win a free autographed copy of her book, The Mommy Mojo Makeover. I can tell you that that book is so well written and amazing. And whether you win a free copy or not, you should definitely go grab one. I will make sure that I link that in the show notes as well. And if you have any questions about anything that we talk about in any of the interviews during this series or ever, make sure that you schedule a relationship breakthrough call with me so we can talk about how to unlock that sexuality that as women we are endowed with. And it is my mission and purpose to help couples experience the incredible benefits of a healthy sexual relationship. So next week, we're going to hear from the Laura Brotherson on knowing her intimately, 12 keys to creating a sextraordinary marriage. I know you're not going to want to miss it. And until next week, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.